What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Knights at the Roundtable. This one is one-on-one, and I'm here with my beautiful friend, Penelope Vasquez. Throughout this interview, you will hear me say Penstifer, because that is her loving nickname, just like you all have gotten used to Bobies.
You have to have nicknames for everyone.
It has to. Only if I care about you. If you don't have a nickname, then I don't really care about you.
Compliment.
Sorry for everyone who
Can
doesn't
Can I fix
have...
your hair real quick?
Do it.
Right here.
Penelope is a makeup artist. And
sorry, it's force of habit.
All
it's
that good stuff. So, how are you?
Good.
This is good. This is fun because you know I've been wanting to do this for a while.
Yeah, we've been trying to work this out. So, we're here.
And this has been something that you've done interviews because your story is unique, which we'll get into it more. But this one I felt was more important because I felt like you've gone through such an amazing journey as a woman, as a believer, as whatever you would put that label as.
Human
being, yeah. And I feel like it's such a story that's, I feel, will help, benefit, bless so many women out there. And so we'll start it with, look, before your Bay Area all day, what brought you to L.A.?
I moved to L.A. to be a professional dancer. Before I even wanted to be a dancer, I wanted to pursue sports medicine. Mm. And
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And then that's when like Britney and NSYNC were kind of coming out, and I was watching performances on MTV
or the VMAs.
And I was like, oh, that looks cool. I remember like feeling like butterflies in my stomach and like the passion started stirring.
Right.
And when I found out that you can pursue it as a career, I was like, done deal. Talked to my mom about it, moved to LA the year after I graduated from high school, and then came out here and tried to do the thing.
But you got out here, what was the first experience? Like, what was the first big win? Or what was the first big loss? Like, what was the thing that hit you like, damn, this is real?
I mean, when I first moved out here, I did not like it. I didn't know anyone. LA can feel very lonely, and especially if you don't have any friends out here. I went back home every 2 weeks.
Wow.
I drove to the Bay every 2 weeks because I was just, like, lonely and I wasn't adjusting well. And I booked a job my first, like, month out here. And then from there, I met Harry Shum, who you know. He was my first friend. And then he introduced me to Oasis, which then I started to find community.
Okay.
So I think, I mean, yeah, milestone-wise, like, booking a job in the first month is a pretty big, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it takes time. And then I remember after I booked that job, I hadn't booked anything for like 8 months.
Wow.
So I would say, you know, it was hard because you come with the expectation of like, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to book all the stuff. And then the first week, the first month, it's like, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no. And you go to audition after audition after audition, and you're not booking anything.
Yeah.
I'm not even making it to like, you know, to the callbacks or anything. And it's just like a reality check, you know, that this world is bigger than you, you know? And dance is hard because it's a big comparison game. I mean, you're brought up in the studio in front of a mirror, analyzing your body, analyzing your like movement and how you look. And so it's kind of a mind game.
That's interesting. Do you think that was the beginning? Okay, let me ask you this. As a woman, did you notice your body before then?
Yes, I was very aware. And I'm very aware now that even when I was 19 years old and super skinny, I still was battling like thoughts of like, I am not skinny enough or I'm not, you know, good enough. Like, really?
You think that was because of dance?
That's all I can put it to,
yeah.
But I think so, yeah.
Because pre-dance, were you like, did you even like have a thought?
I don't even remember pre-dance because I've danced my whole life.
Right.
You know, so.
Man, so you mentioned though, Harry introduced you to Oasis. Is that, were you into religion or Jesus before, like in the Bay? Or was LA the first?
Yeah, so I grew up, I went to Catholic school my whole life. Like K through 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember, and we went, I got confirmed, I got baptized and all that. But then mid adolescence, my mom started going to a Christian church that was very radical, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had a pastor come from Africa who spoke, and I was 11, and I remember receiving the Holy Spirit and, like, whoa, passing out.
Yeah.
And not really remembering what happened, but I remember feeling, like, a flush of, like, a whoosh over my body, mm-hmm, and then I just, like, got weak. Mm-hmm. It was real for me in that, yeah, moment, and I think for me that was, like, the beginning of my connection and my relationship with God, because that experience was real, and so I always had God's voice in the back of my head. And even though, like, we didn't stay with the Christian church the whole time, we, like, kind of went back and forth between Christian and Catholic church, I always had, like, a very strong sense of spirituality.
Yeah. Do you feel like there were multiple moments in time where you knew this was God? This wasn't how I was raised. This wasn't religion. Like, this was God.
For sure.
Yeah?
For sure. I mean, there's definitely moments where it's like, it feels like it's an organized situation. Mm-hmm. And then there's moments where it's like, I definitely feel God's presence. And I can say that I've experienced God in those situations.
Does any, like, stick out?
I mean, besides that one when I was 11, mm-hmm, we're going to get into it, but when my ex-husband was in the hospital, like, that was a very real...
Tell us a story so that way people know.
So, I was married for 9 years, and 3 years in, we had our son, and then when he was 10 months old, my ex-husband suffered from 4 brain aneurysms, and he was in the hospital for 6 months. And when he was in ICU, which he was in ICU for like 9 weeks, I went beast mode.
Yeah.
So we had scriptures about healing. We had him up all over the room, and I had him up above his bed. So if he ever opened his eyes for a moment, he would see, like, truth.
Yeah.
And then I had pictures. Did I say that? I had pictures of our family, and I had worship music playing the whole time. And there was a lot of up and down in that season. Like, he would get better, there'd be complications, he would get better, there'd be more complications, and then it was just, like, in and out of, like, just trauma. It was very dramatic. It was a very dramatic time. And I remember just holding on to what I knew, which was the word and prayer, and I had, like, reached out to our community, our friends, dance community, church community, and just was going ham on believing for his healing, believing that he was going to make it through, you know, and people can say manifest and just attract positivity. It was just like all the things that I knew, I was applying it, and I legit felt God's presence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like a thickness,
mm-hmm,
in his hospital room, where to the point where when his mom came in town, I told her, I'm like, if you're going to cry, I would rather you step out, because we're trying to bring hope and not bring any kind of sadness.
Right.
And not that I didn't want to acknowledge if she was sad about it, but I just wanted to maintain that energy in, mm-hmm, the room.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was like a very real experience that I had with God.
Yeah.
And then I got to see him get better.
Yeah.
You know, and be healed from all of that. Because majority of people who have brain aneurysms, they die mm-hmm, instantly. Yeah, they bleed through their ear. I mean, I've heard horror stories. And I saw him almost, you know, I mean, one of the things that he got, like, they pierced his colon from the feeding tube.
Mm-hmm.
Like, out of all the things, all the other brain things that we were dealing with, like, stupid complications,
yeah,
like that, you know, and he had to have stomach surgery, and then it had got infected, then he had to have another stomach surgery. It was like all these unnecessary things that were totally challenging our faith,
mm-hmm,
where you could think, oh, this is it,
yeah,
you know? But we were really, like, in good spirits the whole time.
That's, like, amazing. And then at the end of it, though, like, when it was all said and done, he didn't come out on the other side the same as he came in, right?
No.
It was a different person.
Unfortunately, no, he didn't. So the whole rehab process started with teaching him how to talk again, mm-hmm. how to answer, because he lost his speech, and how to answer yes or no. He would just like point to yes or no to give us answers, how to walk, how to speak Spanish, how to eat. And it was kind of funny because at the time Elijah was a baby, you know, toddler, and he was learning how to walk, how to talk, how to eat solids.
Wow.
And so I was like doing...
Raising two kids.
Yeah, I was doing both with both of them. And, you know, changing diapers for Elijah wasn't... Changing diapers for my ex-husband wasn't as big of a deal because I was changing diapers for a toddler. Mm. So it's like, oh, well, I'm here, so...
Yeah. Damn, that's deep.
So here's the hope part is, like, you want him to get better and you're seeing him get better. We would hit these milestones of, like, oh, he's walking. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Oh, he's eating on his own now. Like, I used to have to feed him, and then now he's eating on his own. Awesome. He starts talking, and then it's getting clearer. Like, his enunciation's getting better. Then his Spanish is coming back, and it's like you're hitting all these milestones. So you have this hope of, like, I'm going to get my husband back. This is great, you know, because there was definitely moments in the hospital where I'm like, oh, my God, I might be a single parent. Like, this, I might not have my husband anymore. And then to see him, like, hitting these milestones is like, okay, God, you're real. Mm. Cool. Because it's like we're praying, we're doing all the things, and there's just this hope that he's going to be back to who he was. Cut to, I don't know, 3-4 years after his injury, and he's not real. Like, he's better, and if you look at him physically, he looks like Stilo. Mm-hmm. But his... capacity, his mental capacity, wasn't at 100.
Yeah.
I want to say that maybe he was like at 80%. And a lot of his understanding of certain situations was hard for him. So, and his doctor explained it to me like this. When the way that we are able to process like frustration, anger, happiness, joy, like we kind of like file it differently in our brain.
Right.
And that part of his brain that allows him to do that was hard for him. It was almost like he couldn't, you know, not that he couldn't, but it was just challenging for him. So then he would just get really frustrated.
Yeah.
So then he would turn to anger and frustration very easily because he didn't know how to answer questions or I'm trying to think of a good situation, like a good example. Like something simple as like putting Elijah to bed or,
right.
you know, giving him a bath. Every toddler does not want to take a bath. So instead of like taking a moment, and I think this is also, I don't know if that's a great example actually, but, you know, it is frustrating, but then you recognize that like this little person is not understanding. So you just make it work, you play, mm-hmm. you be playful or what, and he would just get so frustrated and he would start yelling and I felt for him, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So that at the end of the day, I'd be like, okay, what happened? We talk about it. And he's like, he just doesn't want to. He'd have a very, like, emotional reaction.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard because it was a lot on my plate to, one, like, take care of the household, cook, clean, work. And then I would have to, like, I would try to coach Stilo through his emotions in sorting through these like daily issues. And it just became like day after day of him frustrated and angry.
Yeah.
And then he would forget. So that was hard too, because it's like, he would forget 5 minutes later that he had an issue.
Yeah.
You know, so then I would be confronted with, I'd be confronted with these problems with him on a daily basis. And to me, I'm not a confrontational person. Right. Like, I don't even like arguing. Like, I'm like, even like, this is fine, but like any kind of like intense tone, mm-hmm. I'm like, ah, stop yelling at me, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
sensitive. And those days were really hard because I just felt like we never had resolve. Like, I had to be okay with never having resolve with my husband. And then he would forget. So we would fight, and then 5 minutes later, he's like, what's for dinner? And I'm like, oh.
It's like 50 First Dates, the Adam Sandler movie. Looking in, I don't think I grasped. I tried to grasp how hard it was.
Yeah.
But for you to be raising a toddler and at the same time literally raising your husband, like, the image of what you saw, like, what marriage would be, and then what it turned into was so drastically different, you know?
Well, I took a lot of pride. Like, I felt very proud of myself.
Yeah, because I was proud. I was like, how is she doing this?
I mean, that was a question that I got a lot, was how are you doing this? And I'm like, I don't know, you just do it. You know, when people are like, oh, I don't know how if I'll be a good mom. When you have that baby, that it kicks in and you just do it. You have no question. Like, it's just like, you just go. And that's where I was. I was like, I'm just going to go. But I was like, I'm doing it. I definitely had moments where I'm like, I'm doing all these things, but I don't have time to like sit and think about it too much.
Right.
I just need to go, you know? And as a woman, I felt very empowered, but I also just like held on to the hope, right? So I was still in beast mode even though he was in the hospital. I mean, after he was out of the hospital, I was still in beast mode with praying. And I mean, we were in a marriage connect group. We were meeting with our pastor once a week. We were seeing a therapist at his rehab center. I had a group of women that I was in a group with, a mommy group I was in. And I had several husbands all taking a role in his life mm-hmm. to cover a topic. One husband would talk about finances. Another husband would talk about health. Another husband would talk about fatherhood. And they would, on their own time, meet up with Stilo just to have coffee with him to talk about those things, to kind of try to sew into him. And he was just angry all the time, but then wouldn't remember. And that was hard because it's like trying to talk to someone that you love and you're like, look, you're kind of being a butthead. And they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, they're like, life is good. God's good. And then on the outside, when people would talk to him, he'd be really positive. And it's great. It looks great. Like, everybody's like, he's doing so good. I'm like, yeah, he is. But then at home, because with me, he's most comfortable and I'm his safety, that's where he would feel more comfortable to just lash out.
Yeah.
And the frustrating part is that he wouldn't remember.
So you couldn't even correct him. It wasn't like... It's literally he didn't know he was doing what he was doing or didn't remember.
No. And the hard thing is like, do you continue to help coach him? Because is it even going to stick? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, is it even worth it? Like, I got to the point where I had to be like, okay. And then just bite my tongue. Because it's like, do I want to exert more energy trying to talk him through this? Or do I just swallow it and just try to just get through the day?
So then let me ask you, what became the darkest period and how did that bring you to calling it like done?
Well, I actually started smoking pot.
Yeah, smoke a little herbals.
I was very private about it because I felt a lot of shame.
Sure.
But I needed to somehow, I felt like I was walking around with my shoulders up and everything in my body was tense. I physically was, because I remember one day driving away from my apartment and like driving away from Stilo and my whole body going, and I was like, whoa,
yeah.
What's going on? And that's when I really started to realize that like, I'm not healthy. Because I started smoking a little bit just at night.
And we're not, just for all who heard me say what I said, we're not saying go smoke.
No.
This is a personal testimony story.
Yeah, this is my story. So I
have to throw that disclaimer before they all think, he's saying smoke.
It's all good. Because I've never really been a big drinker.
Yeah.
And so in high school I would smoke, but then I stopped when I started going to church, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'm going through this very traumatic season in my life, and I remember just at night I would smoke a little bit, and then I would be calm, and it would kind of relax me, and then I started drinking wine, and then I would became like, at night when I would put the boys down, it became this thing where I just wanted to numb myself.
Yeah.
And I realized that I was abusing it, and something was wrong with where my intention was with why I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I started working out and stuff, but I just in that moment realized like I'm really unhappy. Like I'm really, really unhappy. And I couldn't even imagine, like it just got to the point where I was like this. And I was on edge where normally I'd be really patient with him, I was on edge with him in the day-to-day. And I realized that I'm not doing good for myself, nor am I doing good for him or my son. Mm-hmm. So, like, what is the point? So, and at that time, there was a time where I remember we were doing the Bonquiqui tour. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, a very short tour, 3-week tour. I'm like, okay, I need this. I need a break. I need to do something creative, feed my soul. I had figured out something for both the boys, and I was able to go. And I remember when we started rehearsals, like, feeling like an overwhelming, like, whoosh of joy. Because I was, one, dancing, which is, like, my first love. Purely, like, the purest form of, like, creative expression for me is dance. And being able to tap into that again was, like, my spirit, like, waking up. Mm-hmm. And feeling joy being on stage, and, like, I just was so happy, and I was like, ah, I forgot about this feeling.
Yeah.
And feeling that made me realize, wow, I've been so unhappy. I thought I was good because I'm just in beast mode. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm fulfilling my purpose as a mom, as a wife, and I'm just doing it. But, like, not even thinking about if I'm happy or not. Like, not even, like, considering.
Wow, how many women do that?
Like, just I think women do it a lot.
Just programmed to just keep it going and never stop.
Well, we can do it. Like, we can do multiple things and keep going, and we're like, we're good. We can go a long time.
Yeah.
But then you later realize, like, oh, I'm really unhappy. And I think that's why a lot of people do end up, like, divorcing
or
and
cheating
and doing all these things, because they're not checking in with themselves. And I'm really lucky that I had that opportunity to check in with myself, and through dance was able to remind myself that, like, there is joy for you in your life, and you just need to figure out how to bring it back into your life. Because I was not doing anything for myself at that time.
And sadly, though, that came to you making the decision of, like, that maybe being within this marriage wasn't the best for you, or...
Yeah, I mean, that's what's hard is, like, okay, the Christian belief, you know, what the Bible says is you don't divorce. You know, you stay married. You marry, and the idea is you live your life happily ever after. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily the case. I had a really hard time because after tour, I mean, to go from the dramatic, like, excitement, joy, passion, you know, from being on stage and dancing and doing what I love to going home back to real life, it was like 100 to, you know, it's just like very dramatic difference, and it kind of hit me in the face, and I was like, okay. So then I started, like, trying to do things to, like, bring joy into our life. I remember we went on vacation. I tried to do, like, more fun activities, like going to Disneyland, even though it wasn't something that we could afford. I was like, this is for the joy of our family. So I would try to do these things to bring joy. And then after that vacation, I was like, I don't know what else to do because I'm trying to bring joy. I'm trying to use all my resources. I'm praying. I'm believing. I don't know if I can do any more, like, praying, believing. Mm-hmm. You know, at what point am I going to be happy? Because I'm like, God, I'm believing for all these things, but then I'm so miserable to the point where I definitely had suicidal thoughts. I don't think I wouldn't go that far.
Right.
But knowing that I had that moment,
I
checked in with myself and was like, Penn, what are you doing? Like, is it worth it to get to this point?
And it's funny that you say that the one thing that was really weighing on you the most was the idea of what we've been taught through Christianity of this, like, you just don't. There's no such thing as divorce, which obviously we're not promoting, you know, divorce or whatever. But at the same time, you know, when I look at the situation, I'm like, man, and this is just me being real myself. I'm like, shit, I don't know if I would have lasted that long to be all real. Because I, you know, obviously we were walking through it with you, and it was insanely hard.
I mean, everybody's advice was always like, let's just pray.
Yeah. Which prayer works, but...
I did that!
But no, I get it. Sometimes, man, sometimes, you know, what do you do when you don't get the answers
so
that you
hard. No, it's that so you hard. Want? It's so hard because I did pray. I did see our pastor and talk to our pastor every week. Mm-hmm. Saw a therapist every week. Connect group, like, went to church. I had Stilo serving, like, we did
everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I was so open. I'm like, if you have any ideas, please. And I remember I would call my mentor, like, regularly, and I would just sob. She's like, pull over, because I'd be driving. And she's like, just pull over. And I'd just be sobbing. Sorry. I'd be sobbing, and I just didn't, I felt like I couldn't breathe, you know? And I'm like, God, I'm trusting in you, but, like, I'm dying here. Mm. Miserable. And it took me a long time after tour because I started to realize that I needed to, I saw the joy, I felt the joy that I hadn't felt in a long time, and then I was trying to bring it back into my life, and when I realized that, like, I don't think I can, the way things are, I don't think I can. And I remember the doctor telling me, like, that part of this, his brain that is injured is his ability to empathize and connect. Mm. And I'm like, well, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
That's super important in a marriage and a relationship. And before I had even made the decision to do it, like, I had spoken to my mentor. I'd spoken to the pastor because I didn't feel good about it, mm-hmm. you know, and all I want to feel in that moment, if I'm making that decision, is support from those people. Like, so I think I'm going to leave and separate from him, but please forgive me.
Yeah.
you know, and please don't like disown me. And, you know, it's like,
that's funny. That was your fear, that these people who were Jesus followers, you were scared that they were just going to leave. Did any leave?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Did that have an effect on how you saw God?
No, well, I think how I saw God was more affected by the situation.
That it didn't happen the way you...
That it did. Mm-hmm. And I was very angry with God after. It's like, the hell. I did all the things.
Yeah.
I went to church, I served, I read my Bible, I was in Connect Group, you know, I did all the things.
Yeah.
I was a good Christian girl, and it still didn't work out. So where's the promise in that you promised me?
Yeah.
Right? So I was very angry with God, and I kind of was just like rebelled and just stopped going to church and did my own thing. And I mean, I'm so thankful I stayed connected with you guys and my mentor and people who cared most, mm-hmm. you know, and that to me showed God's love was through those people. But there were a lot of people that I disconnected with me and or from me, and I don't talk to anymore. Wow. And I don't know why, you know, but I can't help but think, like, oh, it's because I stopped going to church or because they didn't agree with my choice.
Well, that's the thing, yo, with Christianity, there's so... Not in a bad way. When I say Christianity, I don't want to do a blanket statement because I hate blanket statements. But there are things that are prominent in the faith that we love and support where there's not a lot of room for anything outside of normal. When you have to make a decision like that because your circumstances... Absolutely no one would have been able to write this or predict this.
Sure.
And you have to make certain decisions for life, like literally life, like mm-hmm. for you to stay alive and breathing and not want to drive into a wall. I found it to be true that people have patience with other people who are dealing with the same struggles that they're dealing with. So if I was another mom or another husband that was dealing with your situation mm-hmm. and we had enough in common, mm-hmm. then I would have empathy for you.
Right.
But if we weren't, my empathy just isn't really...
You don't connect
there.
Yeah.
Because we're not struggling. And I see that all the time. You got guys who struggle with porn and guys who don't struggle with porn. And the guys who don't struggle are just like, come on, dudes. Just don't look at the computer.
Yeah.
Just don't do this.
It's like not a big deal.
It's really not. Yeah. And I'm like, man, where do we lose compassion and empathy? Like, where do we lose it? And I think that was the thing that it was tough for me, your situation, because I got angry at God because I was like, man, Lord, it wasn't this dude's fault. He didn't, he wasn't doing something stupid to get aneurysms, and she wasn't being this horrible person to deserve this. It was literally no one's fault. No one to be mad at, no one to be whatever, but we're here with this shit show of a situation.
Yeah.
And people have to make decisions to survive. And it was so hard for me to process. Not that it was even important for me to process it. The only reason it was important because I was determined to stay in your life. Mm-hmm. And so I had to process it. And the only thing I can come to as I was looking at it, which is what kind of pisses me off that people couldn't come to this conclusion is if I was in your shoes. And I had to really take a look at it and I'm like, man, if I, would I have even tried all the things that she tried?
I don't think a lot of people did that. Or I don't know. I don't know if any, you know, I don't know. But that,
well, you would have known because they would have stayed. They would have supported.
Yeah. I mean, that, and that was like my fear in making the decision to leave, to separate from him, was I'm the asshole. Like, I'm the asshole who is leaving my husband who has a brain injury.
Yeah.
What kind of person am I? And then the judgment that I was going to get, not just from normal people, but from the church, I had that weighing over me. And that's what I, why I think I just stayed for so long. But, you know, you get to your boiling point and you're just like, I can't anymore, you know. It's like this or I die. That's how dramatic it was for me in my head. You know, it was like, I feel like I'm dying. And so I had to make a hard choice. And I stopped going on Facebook. Because I just didn't want to hear, and I just needed to like take a second to separate myself. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, social media is interesting too. It's like I had a lot of like pressure about what the church was going to think of me. Mm-hmm. So then I stopped like going on Facebook. I disconnected from that, right? But then Instagram started like coming up. So then there's this other part side of me that was like, I don't care. Like, once I went through that emotion, then I went through the, I don't care what they think. So then I'd, like, post, like, because I'm trying to get back into dance. So it's, like, I'd post, like, a sexier picture because I'm feeling empowered and I've been working out. And I'm, like, you know, I'm trying to get my groove back and get back in the dance scene. And it's, like, well, what are they going to say about this post? And I just got in this mode of, like, I don't care. I don't care because I have been through the worst of the worst. And you're going to stick around and love me or you're not. You know, and I just need to find the joy back in my life.
And through all that, do you feel like you found it? Like the whole, because I know you said you had a rebellion stage, you had a self-empowerment stage, a reconnecting to yourself, your body, your mind, your femininity, your sexuality, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, what did you learn through all that? Because right now, you know, obviously we know each other, so I know that you're in a, I would say, a more balanced place. But what did you learn through all that?
I learned a lot about myself. And for me, I'm not the type of person that's like, if you give me advice, I'm like, okay, yeah, I won't do that.
Yeah, like, that sounds good.
Great, cool, I won't touch that. It's hot, right? I'm like, oh, it's hot?
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts, you know? So I kind of let, like, I've been very open. Mm-hmm. And being angry with God, like, I just kind of, like, I've had some fun in life.
Yeah.
And you know, I dated a little bit, and I was started going out a lot. And I just kind of, like, went through this phase where I guess when you're, like, in your early 20s, you go through this, like, party phase.
Yeah.
And I hadn't gone through that. So post my divorce, I went through this phase.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of energy, so it's like I would do that and experience all these things. And did I find joy? Sometimes, not always. Sometimes I would find myself hurt and heartbroken and lonely and sad. And then sometimes I would find some new, like, truth. Mm-hmm. And find some wholeness within myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of the journey. And for me, it was, I don't think I would be where I am if I didn't allow myself to be open to experience all of it. Having compassion for yourself and, like, being okay with, like, this is where I'm at. And I think that for me, the biggest thing was like knowing that God always meets you where you're at. Mm-hmm. So whether I'm going to church right now or not, God's going to meet me where I'm at. If I'm angry with him, he's going to meet me there. It's mm-hmm. fine, because it's like a relationship. Like, you don't always get along. It's not all like popcorn and mm-hmm. what is that saying? What do they say?
Whatever. I don't know. I was going to say peaches and cream.
Peaches and cream. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's say peaches and cream. Sounds better, popcorn. I feel like it's, I've had a very colorful relationship with God. It's just been seasons of I'm super close and connected, and seasons of like, I'm over it.
Well, it's important to realize that God can handle that. I think we get so afraid, as if he's not omnipotent and omniscient, as if we believe what the Bible says, that he is the author and finisher of our fate, that he is all-knowing, that he doesn't know what your story is going to look like. It's not, and I know for a long time, I would act like my sin or the things that I did were a surprise to him. So I would hide. I would be shameful of who I was and the things that I did. And I'm like, fool, when he decided to save you, he knew this was going to be your path.
Yeah.
He knew you were going to try this. He knew you were going to venture into this. He knew all these things. Don't treat him like some stepdad who doesn't know you.
Yeah.
Like, he knows you. And because of that, don't be afraid to bring your ugliest self to him. Don't be afraid to bring the self that is wilding out.
Yeah.
That's trying all the waters. That's testing all the boundaries. Because what you're going to get in him is like, all right, this is going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me. But whenever you're ready to come back and do it my way, I'm going to be here.
Right.
So I think it's amazing. I know your journey is still going. So I'm happy that I get to be a part of Act Two.
Thanks.
And here's to pouring a little joy into your life. Love you so much. Thank you for taking time. Love you guys. If you know anyone that this would help, or if it helps you, man, subscribe, share, do all the good things, and send it to somebody who needs it. We're grateful and humble, and we pray that you always have a seat at the table. But if you don't, you're always welcome at ours.